Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joyful, joyful.
The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the
Priest,
the Pom,
and the Poof.
This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community. Good evening, and you're on the Spirit Lounge with the Pom and the Poof, and we haven't got a priest tonight. She's having a little rest.
No, she's having a rest. She sent me a text message saying, I'm not going to come in tonight.
Well, she's done lots of work. So hi, Priestie, if you're listening, the Pom and the Poof will carry on without you.
We did actually. I saw her at the weekend, and we did this fabulous interview. We spoke to Tim Kurek, who is the author of a book. And his book is all about what he experienced of gay life in Nashville, Tennessee, when he pretended to be gay for a year.
This is a fascinating guy. He's got heaps of YouTube coverage. His book is called The Cross in the Closet. And he's Nashville, Tennessee is Bible Belt part of the US. And he was raised fairly strictly in terms of religion. And part of that teaching was that homosexuality is evil. And I don't know how old he was. I think he was perhaps in his teens or early 20s. And one of his closest female friends came out to him. And she had been excommunicated by her family, her church, her community, everybody. And she was such a good friend and such a close friend. I think it made him stop in his tracks and really think about what that meant.
Mm, fantastic story. So we've got that interview. So you will hear Priestie, even though she's not here in the studio with us tonight. Of course, if you do want to participate in our discussion, please send us in a text message, 0427-JOY-949, or send us an email on air at joy.org.au. Now, without any further ado, let's hear from our special guest, Tim Kurek. Tim Kurek is author of The Cross in the Closet. Tim was raised within the confines of a strict conservative Christian denomination in Nashville, Tennessee. He was taught the gospel of separation from a young age. Tim's world was turned upside down when a friend came out to him as a lesbian and revealed she had been excommunicated by her family. Distraught and overcome with questions and doubts about his religious upbringing, Tim decided the only way to empathize and understand with his friend's pain was to walk in her shoes, the shoes of the very people he'd been taught by the church to shun. He decided to come out as a gay man to everyone in his life and to see for himself how the label of gay would impact his life. Welcome to the Spirit Lounge, Timothy Kurek.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell me, what were your motivations for coming out? It sounds like it's a fairly big thing to do.
It's definitely an extreme response, that's for sure. But yeah, in that moment when my friend came out, I really just felt that that I had used my religion as a weapon all my life. And, you know, I don't know about in Australia, but in the States, when a cop is training, they have to be tased by their own taser and maced by their own mace so that they understand the power of those weapons and take it more seriously. And I knew that I needed to be on the receiving end of my beliefs for the first time in my life so I could really question them. And not only that, but just to be able to get as much of a perspective as a straight man is able to, what it's like to have the label of gay attached to me and automatically become a second-class citizen. And I realized the only way I could possibly do any of those things was to come out to my friends, family, and church as gay.
You didn't think that maybe just talking to gay people could do that? I mean, I understand not to the same extent, but that obviously wasn't enough for you?
Yeah, I don't think that just talking to gay people would have done anything for me. I really had to put myself in the position where I had friends and family and church mates and stuff like that coming at me the same way that I came at other people. And, I had to really reconcile the ideas of, our faith and sexual orientation, and homosexual orientation mutually exclusive. Can you be both at the same time, which is something I was always taught you couldn't be. And so, I feel like, I may have heard some stories and that would have been great, but I wouldn't have gotten the perspective by any means unless I did what I did.
That was an amazingly brave decision, but how, as a straight man, did you do it? I mean, what was the logistics about coming out?
There was a lot of stuff that went into it, figuring out how I was going to tell everybody, when I was going to tell everybody. Was I going to try to change anything about myself? Was I going to start dressing more nicely? Was I going to, change any other characteristics of my just natural behavior? And I realized that, really the only thing that I could do to keep it authentic and keep it pure was to change nothing but the label of my orientation and just see how, if nothing else changed about me, but that label, what would happen? And how would my beliefs be tested? So I came out in January of 2009 to everybody, and that's when when all the crap hit the fan, so to speak.
You're on the Spirit Lounge. We're speaking with Tim Kurek, author of The Cross in the Closet.
Joy 94.9.
You're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. That was Sarah McLaughlin. And off air, I was just saying, I'm sure that the Australians crucify her name. How would I properly
well,
say it?
Well, it's typed, it's spelt McLaughlin, not McLaughlin. But then I would imagine some people might say McLaughlin or something, but it's McLaughlin.
Well, there you go. I don't think I'm going to be able to get my mouth around that.
That's your lesson in Scottish.
We have been talking to Tim Kurek on the show this evening. He's a straight man who pretended to be gay to try and find out what it's really like wearing that label and becoming a second-class citizen. Let's listen a little bit more to our interview with Tim Kurek. How did your family take the news when you came out?
Well, my family acted to me... Personally, they acted very loving. They didn't know how to reconcile internally, or spiritually, how to handle having a gay sibling or a gay son. My mom, in her journal, the day that I came out of the closet, she wrote in her journal, I would rather have found out from a doctor that I had terminal cancer and 3 months to live than find out that my son is gay. And to her credit, of everybody in my life, she experienced the most dramatic change other than myself and is now an open and affirming ally of the LGBT community, which is awesome. I think when people come out, one of the hardest things for families, especially religious families, is to think almost selfishly about it. What am I losing by having, a son or a sibling come out of the closet? In the States, and I guess in Australia, with gay marriage not being legal, my mom was losing another quote unquote traditional wedding, and she was going to miss out on having more biological grandchildren that looked like her and, another daughter to bring into the family. And I think that was probably more so what impacted people. They were looking at it in terms of their own life and their own context, and instead of looking at me and my life and my context.
And it's almost for some people a shame, the sense of shame in their faith community that they have a gay son or a lesbian daughter.
Absolutely. When my mom talked to member of the church that she attended that I was raised in up until I went to college. She still went there, and when she told one of the elders of the church about me, he told her not to tell anybody, to keep it quiet because it might have negative ramifications on her at the church just for me being gay. So, yeah, there definitely is a stigma, and it's, and especially where I lived in the Bible Belt, there's, you know, and then the conservative church I was a part of, there, you know, it stigmatizes the family and not just the individual that's coming out.
What about the faith community you were a part of? How did they react?
I was actually interning at a church and had taken a 2-month leave of absence prior. When I came out, my pastor told me that I could come worship with all the other sinners in the church, but he rebuked my choice of friends and rebuked me in the name of Jesus and told me that it was a decision and not a gene and all that typical good stuff. But the shocking part of that was that it came from an email sent from his BlackBerry. And, you know, there was no attempt to contact me or reach out to me at all from anybody, you know, in a more personal way. And I think that ultimately was the most shocking part of everything. You know, I expected to get a lot more backlash than I did, but the people that were in my life didn't even care about me enough to just contact me. My social life and my church life and everything else just completely, it was as though I had died. I didn't get any phone calls, didn't get any texts or Facebook messages or anything from everybody. And, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, in the end, it's not the words of our enemies we'll remember, but the silence of our friends. And I think that was definitely an eye-opening thing for sure.
Did you notice any, like, generational differences? Like, were young people more accepting or older people within the community more accepting?
I think that there definitely is a generational shift that is occurring. I mean, even the more, you know, more conservative people that I've met since, you know, the experiment and everything, I'm noticing that even as conservatives, the younger people are more accepting, more have a more live and let live kind of attitude, and realize that they can't determine the behavior or the actions of other people, and so they just kind of leave it, even if they have a more, like I said, conservative mindset about it. You know, I think the main thing that I had to realize is I don't really care what people believe as long as they're not jerks about it. You know, I think that, you know, we have to coexist. We have to understand how to be in community with one another with grace and love and empathy. You know, we have to realize that we're only the main characters of our own lives. We're not the main characters of other people's lives. We're supporting characters, and that's not a right. That's a gift that those people are giving us. And, you know, I think once we realize that, it makes coexisting a lot more plausible, a lot healthier.
You're on the Spirit Lounge. We're speaking with Tim Kurek, author of The Cross in the Closet.
Joy 94.9.
And this is Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. We're here every Tuesday from 8 till 9 p.m. And we are in the middle of a wonderful interview that we did with Tim Kurek, who is the author of The Cross in the Closet. This is the American who's getting a lot of coverage right now. He, I think, is in Australia, isn't he? Because he's speaking at some conferences. He's the guy who went undercover as gay for a year in his hometown of Memphis, Tennessee. Nashville.
Nashville.
Sorry, Tim.
Memphis? Throw me off.
That sounded good.
Yeah, he's coming to Australia early next year. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, should be good. We're chatting with him about the year that he spent undercover. Tim, you even took a job at a gay bar to complete your gay picture.
Cafe. I was a barista at a gay cafe.
Gay cafe. Did you have any trouble getting people to believe that you were gay?
No, I don't. I think that people, by and large, just accept you for who you say you are. And especially in the LGBT community, there's not a lot of prying. You know, people don't necessarily feel like they have to get every little detail out of you about everything. It's just kind of like, you know, you tell me what you want to tell me and don't tell me what you don't, and we're okay. We accept you for who you are. And you know, I didn't have a single instance during my year where anybody questioned me specifically about that. I also had a pretend boyfriend who was in on the experiment. He was a supporter, you know, basically a support system, a kind of a teacher for me, taught me how to acclimate and become more comfortable. Because initially when I went into my experiment, when I started hanging out in the LGBT community, I was totally a fish out of water. I felt like I was on an alien planet, because I had never, ever, you know, been around that community before. So, you know, the fact that I had a pretend boyfriend, which to everybody knew him as my boyfriend, and it was also kind of a shield so that if somebody asked me out on a date, I could say, sorry, I'm flattered, but I've got a boyfriend. I didn't have to convince anybody. And I think that was, thank God I didn't have to convince anybody, you know, because I'm not gay. It would be pretty hard to do that. So, you know, everything fell into place very naturally.
So what was it like being gay for a year?
I don't know what it's like to be gay. I'm straight. And I would never presume to understand, you know, what it's like to be gay or to be an expert on anything gay-related as a straight man. So what I like to say and qualify is, you know, I do know what it's like to have the label gay attached to me and to be reduced and relegated to the status of second-class citizen for people's perceptions of my orientation. And I, you know, I got to spend, you know, a year in the closet as straight as well, you know, and I obviously didn't get the full view of either, because I had a timeline. You know, I knew that no matter what happened, 10 or 8 or 6 months from that point, I would be, you know, coming back out as straight. And so, you know, I feel like I liken it to looking at the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel through a hole the size of a pinhole. You might see a little bit of blue, but you're going to miss, you know, the picture. And, I mean, I definitely got as much of a perspective on it as any straight person can. But it was eye-opening. The glimpse that I got was extremely eye-opening. The stereotypes that fell away left and right, you know, were pretty astonishing to me. Because I hadn't just been taught church, you know, those 6 verses talking about homosexuality as being a sin. I had also been taught that, you know, if you're gay, you're automatically hyper promiscuous, and that you're only interested in sex. That really just kind of a, you know, the word used most often, I guess, would be a lascivious kind of person. When I realized that the gay, quote unquote, the gay lifestyle is no different from the straight lifestyle, that was a huge thing. That gay couples, you know, get off work and they go home and cook dinner and watch a movie and go to bed. They don't immediately go home, get all dolled up to go find people to have sex with, you know, those kinds of things. It was really cool. And not only that, but also seeing, as when I was working at a cafe, seeing families with 2 moms and 2 dads and their kids come in, I had always been taught that, you know, you couldn't raise a well-adjusted kid without a mom and a dad. And those kids were the most loved and best behaving, you know, well-adjusted kids I had met. And I think that's, you know, the result of it being such an intentional act as a gay couple or a lesbian couple. You have to jump through a lot of hoops to have children. And so it really is an intentional decision, whereas, you know, a man and a woman can accidentally get pregnant. So that was another view that I got that I didn't anticipate.
Now, we briefly touched on your mother's reaction when you came out earlier. Did your relationship with your mum change during the process, during your experiment where you were wearing the gay label for a year?
Yeah, there were some times where I felt like I was kind of like the daughter she had never had. I mean, she was like wanting to watch movies with me that I would never have watched otherwise, you know, and asking me if I thought that guy was cute or this guy was cute, you know. And initially it was kind of entertaining almost. But, you know, it definitely changed the dynamic of our relationship. And I felt like, you know, the whole thing was just a process. We had an interesting time navigating the whole idea that she wasn't going to get to have another traditional marriage, you know, in the South, you know, and another daughter and more biological grandchildren. You know, she had a really hard time coming to grips with those things. But by the end of everything, she ended up being one of the most accepting people in my life, you know, and would have totally graciously accepted any son that I would have brought into her life. So I think that everything worked out the way it was supposed to. She told me afterwards, she thanked me for doing it afterwards and said I would never have had the chance to walk the walk instead of just talking the talk had she not done this. And, you know, now our relationship is stronger than it ever has been and continues to get stronger. I love her to death. So,
Timothy, what was it like coming out as straight?
You know, I didn't really care much about what the evangelical Christians that I had come out to prior, what their response would be. In fact, the people who I used to be friends with who stopped talking to me, I didn't even reach out and tell them. I was so concerned with the fact that I was going to lose my new friends in the gay community because I made some really great friendships and felt really attached to those people, and I didn't want to hurt them or do anything or make them feel exploited or marginalized by me. And so coming out of straight was definitely probably the most painful process or the scariest process of the whole experiment because, you know, I had more to lose at that point than I ever had before. And thankfully, you know, the vast majority of my friends in the LGBT community were nothing but loving and accepting and gave me the welcome that I had wished I had had the first time around, that I probably should have had the first time around. And I'm very happily still close friends with most of those people that I made friends with in Nashville during that year.
And you're on Spirit Lounge, and we're talking to Timothy Kurek, the author of The Cross in the Closet.
Your voice,
your radio station.
Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Joy 94.9. You're on the Spirit Lounge with the Priest, the Pom, and the Poof. We're talking to Tim Kurek, who's an author, and he's just written a book about his experience that he had spending a year more or less pretending to be gay, wearing the label just to see what it was like. What's it like to be ridiculed by religious groups, etc.
And his book is called The Cross in the Closet.
The Cross in the Closet. It's a fabulous book. I can't wait. So we've got the last part of our interview. Let's have a listen.
Timothy, what were the biggest challenges with being gay versus being straight? I mean, is there areas of challenge for that are common, or is it very different?
I think there are very, very common challenges that LGBT folks face. I think the big thing is having the religious people around you, you know, either trying to convert you or being very dogmatic with you. You know, like I was shocked actually to hear recently that you guys had just shot down equal rights. You know, I thought that being that, you know, America is so saturated with religion that we were probably the only ones who were really having this debate back and forth. And so, I mean, I think that realizing after the fact that this is a worldwide issue right now, that France and Spain just made it legal, that Australia and that a lot of the UK are struggling with these same ideas for equality. I mean, I think it's a pretty universal thing to say that if you're gay, you're treated as a second-class citizen. You're not given the same rights and privileges, and you're not looked at as equal. Your relationships are looked down on. And I don't think straight people understand what it's like to have that as a part of your everyday life. And I think that if they did understand that, the debate would be pretty easily dealt with and resolved, and a lot of things would change in all the different countries that are having this conversation.
I think we've got a generation of politicians in all countries that are not willing to embrace thinking about what it's like.
Yeah. You know, and I think that it's only a matter of time. You know, it's happening now. You know, 20% of the U.S., 20% of the states have made gay marriage legal, and we'll continue to see more and more states following that lead. And I'm happy about that. You know, I think that regardless of your religious beliefs, you can't force your belief system down other people's throats, especially upstanding monogamous citizens, you know, that pay their taxes and just want to be in love with each other and want to have a real substantive relationship, you know. And so I think that it is definitely changing. If nothing else, as this generation of leaders and politicians begin to fade into the background and are no longer doing what they're doing, you know, the newer generation is going to come up and say, "Hey, we're not going to allow people to be treated this way anymore because it's just not right."
During the course of your 1 year, did your faith and belief system change and transform over the course of that year?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If you had talked to me 5 or 6 years ago, you wouldn't have been talking to the same person. You know, I think in terms of faith, as I said earlier, reconciling the fact that homosexuality and Christianity are not mutually exclusive terms, that you can be both and you can have a fruitful, flourishing spiritual life if you're gay. You know, I didn't ever allow that thought to ever enter my head while I was beforehand, and would always tell other people, especially my, you know, the people that I encountered that were gay, you know, it was you have to change, you have to suppress this and yourself if you want to know God. And once I got over that, and once that I saw that wasn't the way it is, I feel like everything else kind of opened up. And for the first time in my life, I wasn't just regurgitating, you know, things that my pastor was saying. I actually was challenged to study the Bible for myself and to challenge those views that I had always held so close, you know, and question the fact that they may not be right, that I may have just been taught something that wasn't true. And it was definitely a difficult thing to do, to go from being a really hyper-entrenched believer, you know, to realizing that I don't have a monopoly on truth, that I'm a fallible human being, and that other people have valid perspectives and faith-wise as well. So, yeah, it definitely changed. If anything, it strengthened my belief in God and made me appreciate the diversity that I feel, you know, He's created in this world. So,
that's fantastic. Timothy, did you know when you began this adventure that there would be a book out of it?
No, actually, that's a good question. I have always wanted to be a writer, and that's always been my passion, but I'm a college dropout. I only spent a year at a university, at Liberty University, Jerry Falwell's. I didn't think that without a degree and without any contact in publishing that I would ever have a shot at getting published or pursuing writing as a career. And it wasn't until about 3 or 4 months into my experiment, where I was reading over my journal entries, that I was keeping journaling daily about my experience. And I started realizing, wow, I really, really want to share these with people. You know, and the reason the book is so, I would say, raw and honest, and I made myself as transparent as possible, in that, or I allowed myself to be as transparent as possible, is because they all started out as journal entries. And it wasn't until December of 2011 that I got a book deal. So it was a long process before it ever really became a book. I was doing this for my community and for my own kind of spiritual benefit. I knew that I couldn't look at people the same way. I needed to question everything. So
now we've been talking to Timothy Kurek, and the book The Cross in the Closet is available from Amazon.com or from Timothy Kurek, that's K-U-R-E-K, one word, .com. Timothy, thank you so much for talking to us on Spirit Lounge.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9 in the Spirit Lounge. We've been speaking with Tim Kurek. What a fascinating guy. We've got another special guest joining us on the phone. Carl Hand is the pastor of Crave Metropolitan Community Church, a lecturer at United Theological College, and is on the organizing committee of Community Action Against Homophobia, which has been organizing marriage equality rallies in Sydney. He is passionate about Jesus, people, spirituality, and grassroots activism. Welcome to the Spirit Lounge, Carl.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell me about what is the Walk Home Conference?
Well, Crave Conference happens every year, and it's a time when our church, Crave, brings together all of our friends around Australia and brings in some really cool speakers, and it's a big morale boost for our congregation, but it's also a time for, I guess, inclusive churches all around Australia to catch up with each other, because often we're very scattered across Australia and can often be quite alone. There's not many inclusive churches around, so it's always good to have them all get together and share a bit of time together as well.
Carl, hi, it's Bertie here. Good evening. When you talk about an inclusive church, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think to me, what it should mean is that it's just a church where everybody is welcome and you're not going to be excluded for any reason whatsoever. Mm. What we find in, I guess, an Australian context at least, is that often means people who are gay and lesbian. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it means people who are transgendered as well. But we would like to think that being the body of Christ and Christ embracing all people, no matter who they are or no matter what they are, that just being a Christian church means that we would be inclusive.
Mm. So what does your conference seek to achieve every year then?
Well, it's really about encouraging people in their walk and encouraging people in their Christian life. This year, our theme is going to be really the walk home is the journey that you go on through life. And most of our speakers are going to be straight people who are supportive of our community.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of, when we started organizing it, there's a lot of people in Australia who, I guess, belong to mainstream churches and took a big risk in coming out and supporting gay and lesbian people or even supporting marriage equality this year. Some of them copped a lot of flack over it. Some of them had horrible things written about them. One guy even lost his job. And that was a lot of the different speakers that we were bringing together. And then Tim Kurek launched his book, mm-hmm. and it was just such a perfect match. Like, mm-hmm. it's his whole journey about trying to discover what it's like to walk in somebody else's shoes for a year was the exact point that we were trying to get across in the theme of our conference. So we called him up and he was just super excited about the idea of coming out to Australia, and it's going to be his first time here. And yeah, it's really been a buzz for us. It's really been a good time.
Well, that's fantastic. That's a great coincidence, because actually we interviewed him at the weekend and we ran the interview just tonight before we called you on the phone. So he's going to be fascinating, and I've watched some of his YouTube clips and they're awesome. Now, what subject are you talking about at the conference?
Well, I'm talking about the just the idea of God as our dwelling place. So this is going to kick off the conference on the theme of where are we going in the journey home, and I guess where are we coming from, and what is the purpose of it all. So that's going to be drawing on images from the Bible about God as a home. And there are so many different pictures of God in the Bible, but one that is often not talked about is that, especially in the Hebrew scriptures, people talked about God as a home. And so that's the idea that I'm going to be exploring. And the idea that our journey in life really is a journey to reconnect with that spiritual center.
So can anyone attend the conference, or do you have to have been involved with Crave in some way before?
No, in fact, we're hoping that people that we've never met before will rock up. And actually, that's one of the good things about Tim being such a celebrity at the moment, and he's been advertising it on his on his Facebook page and all that is we've just had a whole bunch of randoms sign up and people that we've never met before. So we're really excited this year about meeting a lot of new people at our conference.
And when and where is this all happening? How do I get involved?
Okay, so the Walk Home Crave Conference every year is on Australia Day long weekend because that's a time when you've got lots of space. We're going to do it on the Sunday and the Monday, which is the 27th and the 28th. We thought that the Saturday should probably be reserved for picnics and fireworks. But the Walk Home Conference is going to be held at Redfern Community Centre, which is just a short walk from Central Railway Station. It's in Hugo Street. And it's, well, that's really easy to get to as well if you're traveling from interstate because there's plenty of cheap accommodation and backpackers and all sorts of stuff around in that area. You can register for the conference probably just by Googling it. It's pretty easy to Google, but also you can just go to thewalkhome.info. So the walk home is a single word and then .info. Or go to Crave MCC's website, which is just cravemcc.com, and there's a link to the conference there on our website too.
Now, they've also got a couple of early bird registrations which are still available. Tell us a little more about those.
Well, the early bird rego is just a way of helping us to get our overheads down for the conference by encouraging people to register really early. And the early bird rego was actually just about to run out. And we're launching a lot of this stuff now because we've just organised for Tim to come out. So we're extending that to December 30. We're descending just through to the end of the year. And that's actually, no one knows about that yet, but I'm announcing that on the radio tonight. And
we'll you heard it here, Spirit Lounge. So head over to thewalkhome.info, do your early bird registration before December 30, and you'll be having a great time on Australia Day, or just after Australia Day.
Yep.
Carl, thank you so much for joining us on the Spirit Lounge. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Great.
Joy 94.9.
And that's it from the Spirit Lounge for one more week. We're here every Tuesday from 9 till 10. And if you're interested in following up the people we've spoken to, it's timcorrick.com and it's thewalkhome.info for further information on the book and the conference.
It'll be a fantastic conference. I can't wait. I'm planning on going.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be fun. Everyone should come along too.
And you'll hear both of these guys speaking.
I will. I will.
Well, it's goodbye from the Pom.
And from the Poof.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.